Day. I'm Adam Angst, publisher of the Take Control eBooks and producer of the Take Control Live online presentations. This is the fourth and final presentation that Joe Kissel is giving on the topic of working with your iPad. Joe is one of the best-known names in the world of Apple writers, thanks to his contributions to Tidbits, his articles for Macworld, and his best-selling Take Control eBooks. His most recent one is the hot-selling Take Control of Your Passwords. Joe's technical expertise and amiable style has also made him sought after for talks at conferences such as Macworld Expo and Macmania Cruises. He's given innumerable presentations to Mac industrial groups around the globe. Before I hand the microphone over to Joe, a few administrative reminders. If you're viewing this presentation live, please use the live chat box to ask questions or make comments, which we'll address at the end, time permitting. Do be sure to check the chat, because we have a little present for you there. The lovely and talented Tanya Angst will be monitoring the chat during the presentation. She'll rephrase questions as necessary, but please try to keep them concise. Remember, you don't have to take notes, because we'll update your season pass with full notes about everything Joe says, complete with links to every product mentioned. Finally, we're a little worried about technical difficulties, since Joe's wireless connectivity decided to get flaky last night. He's not entirely certain that he's beaten it into shape. If he's knocked off, I'll answer questions briefly while he comes back on. If there are more general problems, reload the page for information about what's going on. Without further ado, then, I give you Joe Kissel. Please give him back when you're done. Joe.
Thank you, Adam. It's nice to be back with you for our final presentation. I've enjoyed this time we've spent together, and I hope our last session together is lots of fun, too. So today, our topic is sort of potpourri. It's parts and pieces. It's all the things that didn't quite neatly fit into one of the slots that we covered in one of the previous sessions. I hope it's just as interesting and just as helpful. But we're going to kind of explore a lot of different things today that involve using your iPad for work that aren't one of the big categories we discussed earlier. So I want to begin with seven items of update. So as I've said all along, when we have one of these presentations, I tell you the best I can come up with as of that time. But then new apps come out, new products come out, things are updated, things change. And I wanted to give you the very latest information I can today about what I know so far. So I'm going to begin with a few apps that people have told me about that relate to previous sessions, just so that you're aware of them. And again, in the show notes, there will be links and more information. One of these is a text editor called TextForce. So in the category of text editors that connect to Dropbox and support Markdown and do all those kinds of nice things, there's a really nice editor called TextForce. If you are still looking for something in that category, that's a really good one to check out. Another thing you might want to look into, this is really mainly for businesses, it's called Sooner Workplace. So we talked about all these apps that let you edit Microsoft Office documents, Excel spreadsheets, Word files, PowerPoint presentations on an iPad. And there's another category, there's another app that does this, but it does it in a different way. So it does offer the online and offline editing of Office documents. But this is designed for teams working together, for businesses, either small businesses or enterprise. And you pay, I think it's per user per month. But what this gives you is not just the editing of documents, but secure storage and sharing as well. So if you are a little bit worried about Dropbox or one of those other file sharing services for security reasons, and you really need to keep some sensitive stuff within your team and make sure everybody's using the same tools to edit it, Sooner Workplace might be an app for you. In the category of portal apps, which are the ones that connect to a bunch of different cloud-based services like Dropbox and Box and Google Docs and all the different places where you might store documents online and then let you view them and manage them and send them to other different apps. There's an app that's called Files App, and it advertises itself as sort of the finder for iOS. And I've often represented Dropbox as being sort of the de facto file system for iOS because so many apps support it. What Files App is trying to do is not just provide connections to all these places, but give you a really nice interface for viewing and managing your files and folders on your iPad. So that's another one to look into. Now, there are two apps that I want to mention. I'm going to mention them first, and then I'll go show them to you. First is called ScanSnap Connect. Now, a couple of months ago, Fujitsu announced the latest in its line of ScanSnap scanners. This one is called the iX500. It's super fast, has lots of great features. It's black. The previous ones were white or silver. I have one of them on my desk right now. And one of the new features of the ScanSnap Connect iX500 is that it can scan stuff directly to your iOS device without going through your computer or without going through the cloud. So I'll show you that in a minute. While I'm demonstrating things, the other thing I want to demonstrate is another screen sharing app called AirLogin from the good folks at Avatron. Now, I showed you some screen sharing apps before, and this is a new one on the scene. It has some unique features, which I hope you'll like. I like them very much. So before we get to the other couple of updates, let me show you these apps. So if the technology gods are smiling on me, which evidently they are not, we will have my iPad's display here in just a moment. Okay, let's try this again. As I mentioned, we're having a few technical challenges today.
Yeah.
There we are, I hope. Excellent. All right. Let's do ScanSnap Connect. Now, I have previously set this up, so it's connected to my wireless router, and it's configured. I'm going to take a piece of paper. This is actually the instruction sheet that came with the ScanSnap Connect. I'm going to pop it in the scanner. And now, instead of touching the scanner itself, I'm going to touch the scan button in the app. And paper just got fed through. And in just a second, oh, good. The file was saved successfully. And now I can either view it right here in the app, or I can use the open in command and I can send it to GoodReader or PDF Pen or any of the other apps I'd like. So I will mention this app does not do OCR, so if you want OCR, you have to either put the file on a computer or use Evernote Premium or some other cloud-based service that'll do OCR for you. But if you just need the image of a document on your iPad almost instantly, this is a great way to do it. Now I want to show you AirLogin, which I just think is so cool. So one of the things about AirLogin is you set up all your computers with this this desktop app called AirConnect, and then AirLogin will show you not just like a list of them, but actual pictures of them as though they were sitting on a desk. That's kind of nice. Now, when you tap one to connect, of course, I previously entered my password and stuff. What I'm connected to right now is a 27-inch iMac with another 27-inch display next to it. So initially you'll see, well, wow, because it wanted to fit the entire width of those things on the screen, they're all super, super small. And that's not very, very comfortable to work in. But AirLogin does some really cool things. The first thing it does is you'll notice that I have an extra menu bar here. So I'm just going to tap Finder. You'll notice that the menu bar at the top of the iPad screen is finger size. It's full size as though you were actually sitting at that Mac. The menu bar on the Mac screen itself, as you'll see on the right-hand side there in that right-hand window, is very, very tiny. But what this does is it gives you the menu of the currently highlighted or the currently frontmost app at a much larger size so you can activate it with your finger. There's a button down here at the bottom, the second toward the left, that gives you an exposé-like view of all of your open windows on all of your monitors. So if I say, well, I just want to go into here to this newsreader app that happens to be on a particular monitor, it'll zoom right into that. And again, the NetNewsWire menu is full size, so even if the screen itself is reduced, the menus are still operable. So I think this is a really, really cool screen sharing app as long as you're sharing the screen of a Mac. All right, moving on. Two other items I wanted to update you about. The first one is that Apple has started shipping a 128 gigabyte fourth generation iPad. It's obviously more expensive than the previous, highest capacity model, 64 gigabytes. It comes in the usual flavor, you know, different colors and different, you know, Wi-Fi only or Wi-Fi plus cellular. And Apple is aiming this specifically at businesses. I mean, anybody can buy it, but they're targeting it as at businesses. So if you need lots and lots of file storage, that might be something to consider. Last but not least, the jailbreaking situation has changed a little bit. Last time, you may recall, I told you that I was using a non-jailbroken iPad because previously I was using this great app called Display Out on a jailbroken iPad so that you could see where I touched on the screen. But then unfortunately, even though there was a jailbreak available for iOS 6, that app hadn't been updated. Well, now it has been updated, and I installed it, and it was great, except that when I did this little weird thing that we're doing now, which is to route the iPad's display through this app called Reflector running on my Mac so that I can then show it to you here in Google Hangouts on Air, in the course of doing all that, the iPad's display got shrunk so much that you couldn't see it very well. And I'm sure there's probably a way to solve this, but I was not able to solve it in the time I had. So messages, jailbreaks exist for up to iOS 6.1.2, and Display Out now works, which is great. But if you're trying to do something wacky like I'm doing, you might want to be careful. All right, let's get on to today's new topics. We're going to start with how to browse the web like a pro. Now, I don't know about you, but for me, a huge amount of the work I do involves researching stuff on the web. Now, Safari, of course, is the browser that comes with iOS, and the recent versions of Safari are pretty good. They finally support tabbed browsing and lots of neat features. But I've noticed that there are some things that are really useful to do in Safari that are not entirely obvious. So if you use Safari, I'd like to just give you a handful of tips that might help you to use it more productively. And then we'll talk about some other browsers that can do some things that Safari still can't. So let me switch back here to the iPad and open Safari. So I have a few tabs loaded here. And one of the things I frequently find is that I visit these very long pages, and I get down to the bottom of some page, and I realize, oh, I need to go back up to the top, and then scroll. Now, unfortunately, you won't be able to see where I tap, but I want you to trust me that I'm going to tap on that black status bar at the very top of the window where the time is, and when I do that, it just zips right back up to the top. So a quick scroll to the top kind of thing. Now let's see, I visited some website and I have a lot of tabs open and I accidentally closed that site. Is there some way of getting it back? Yes, there is. If you go to the plus button on the very right-hand side, which is the add a tab button, if you touch and hold that, it will show you your recently closed tabs. So then you can just tap the name of a site that you recently closed and you can get it back again. Now, when you are browsing through a particular site and you're following links, like I'm doing right now, obviously there is a back button you can tap to go back to the previous page and back to the one before that and back to the one before that. But if you touch and hold on that back button, you will now get a menu of the recent places you've been on that page, and you can say, oh, I want to skip right back to this particular one. Now, if you use the default settings in Safari for iPad, which I am doing right now, you may notice that it's missing a few things compared to the Mac or Windows version. One of the things it's missing is a bookmarks bar, but you can bring that back. So all you need to do is go into the Settings app, scroll down and choose Safari, and turn on Always Show Bookmarks Bar. While I'm in here, I'm going to turn on another setting which I like a great deal, which is Open New Tabs in Background. And let's switch back to Safari. So ordinarily, if that Open New Tabs in Background is turned off, and notice I do have my bookmarks bar here right beneath the URL field. Ordinarily, if you open a if you tap and hold on a link, this little thing pops up where you can say, "Oh, I want to open this in a new tab." But then, if you didn't if you have the default settings, it's not going to only open it in a new tab. It's going to switch to that tab. If you have that setting turned on that we just turned on, then instead this will happen: that new tab opens, but we're not switched to it. Now, this is great if, let's say, you're doing a Google search and you find, you know, 10 different pages you want to look at. You can say, open this in the background, open this in the background, open this in the background, without having to leave that page and back, leave and come back all the time. So that's a really handy feature. If you are reading a page, let's see here. Let's go to the Tidbits page, for example. Page that is sort of text-heavy, like news or articles, those sorts of things. And let's just, I just happened to tap the top article on the page. It just happened to be about my new book. You will see a little icon in the address field called Reader. And when you tap that, what it does is basically it gives you a version of just the story on that page. It doesn't include all the navigation stuff, all the ads, all that stuff in the header and sidebar, just the text of the article and any graphics in it. And of course, in the process of doing that, it also enlarges it. So that can be a really nice way to read stuff on your iPad. Last but not least, if you are an iCloud member, and if you have if you're signed into your iCloud account on your iPad as well as on any of your other Macs or iOS devices, you can tap the cloud icon just a little bit to the left of the address field, and you can see, well, here are all of the tabs that are open in Safari on my various other Macs that are also logged into iCloud. This is a very handy feature. If you don't already use it, I highly recommend it. Alrighty. So those are my Safari tips. But there are some things that Safari can't do. And if you need some of those things that Safari can't do, you might want to look into one of the other many general purpose browsers. I'm just going to mention three. These are three that I've used. I like. All of the web browsers on your iPad have to use Apple's WebKit rendering engine, which means that the web pages themselves, the contents of the web page, will look pretty much the same in every browser. But that still leaves a lot of room for additional features. For example, Atomic Web Browser and Mercury both let you download files. These could be graphics, they could be Word documents or PDFs or movies or whatever, any sort of document that you can download. You can download them and store them within that app. If it's a type of file like a graphic that the app can display natively, then you can actually view it within the app. And if not, you can send it to some other app that is able to handle it. So for downloading files, viewing things full screen in like a more of a kiosk mode. These both have private browsing features. Chrome and Mercury Browser have a cool feature, which is that if you use Chrome on Mac or PC, and that's your preferred browser, you can use either Chrome or Mercury Browser to sync your tabs, your bookmarks, your passwords, all your other kind of information to your iPad as well. And Mercury Browser also does the same thing with Firefox bookmarks. And this is just the beginning. They all have quite a few more features. One that I have used many, many times is browser masquerading. So for example, if you go to a website and it says, no, sorry, I don't want to display this because you're on an iPad. I only make my information available to people on a real computer or on a Windows computer or using Internet Explorer or whatever it may be. You can say, OK, fine. I will go into the settings of my browser. I will change the user agent string so that this browser, Atomic Web Browser, whatever, claims to be something else. It claims to be Firefox running on Windows or whatever it may be. And that alone often lets you view pages you couldn't otherwise, or it gives you a different view of certain pages that might otherwise be formatted for a mobile device that you might not like. Now, there's yet another category of browsers which I quite like, and I'm referring to these as multitasking browser apps. So in iOS, pretty much everything fills up your entire screen. A browser fills your entire screen, Twitter fills your entire screen, Safari fills your entire screen. Wouldn't it be nice if you could have a browser, but also a note-taking window so that you can actually type about what is in your browser window? This is huge for me because I do tons and tons of web research, and I don't want to have to keep switching, you know, look at my browser, switch to my writing app, take some notes, switch back to my browser. I'd like to just see them side by side. Wouldn't that be cool? I think so. These four apps are among the many that can do that. WriteUp happens to be the note-taking app that I use the most, so I'll show you that. It has a built-in browser, so you can show your writing side-by-side with a web page. And in some of these cases, you can also have other things next to a browser, such as drawing or other kinds of note-taking. But before I show you that, I want to tell you about another category of multitasking browsers, which is those that can simply display multiple browser windows at once. Some of these can display not just two, sometimes as many as four windows or panes all at once. So if what you need to do is, for example, compare the specs of this MacBook Pro and this MacBook Pro side by side, you can open up those. You don't have to switch back and forth between tabs. You can open up two different web pages side by side and compare. So let me show you a couple of these. We'll begin with WriteUp. Now, ordinarily, WriteUp gives you a list on the left of all of your notes, and you tap a note to see and edit that note. I'm going to hide the list for a moment, and then I'm going to tap this third icon in from the top left, which looks like a compass, and that will turn the left-hand page into a web browser, and it might even load that page. It looks like it's working on it. There we go. So if I'm reading The Verge, and I want to take notes on some article, I can read the web page here and type on the right. Very, very handy thing to do. And TubeView is an example of what I call a multitasking web browser as well, but this is strictly for web browsing. So I can view tidbits on the left, I can view Apple on the right, and each one of these panes is independently navigable, and you can arrange them in lots of ways. It's a very powerful way of working with web browsing. Now I'm going to switch gears entirely. We're going to talk about three things that I'm grouping together, because what they have in common is that you're not dealing with documents. You're dealing with data where the atomic piece of information is a lot smaller than document. It's things like a contact or a task or an event, and these are typically things that form larger units such as projects and teams and other sorts of things that you might want to share with other people. So there are a million different apps on the iPad that can do these sorts of things. I want to mention a few that could be useful to you in your work. The first subcategory is task and list management. Now, of course, your iPad includes a reminders app, which is for, you know, keeping basic lists, and you can share those lists with your friends and family, and that's great. Sometimes you might need to do more advanced things with lists. You might need to have lists that have each item has a subcategory or a sub-item. You might need to share particular parts of lists with other people. You might need to add all kinds of additional stuff beyond just simple reminders and calendar items to lists. So if you need to work with lists and tasks, if you have very, very complex things you need to accomplish, there are lots of apps out there that can do that. Now, if you want tons and tons of bells and whistles, you're probably going to look at something like OmniFocus or Things. These are incredibly powerful and advanced to-do list kinds of apps that, I mean, to-do list doesn't even give it, you know, do it justice. They're very, very advanced in terms of organizing and rearranging groups of tasks. The one I want to demonstrate for you, though, does not have a bunch of bells and whistles. It's called Wunderlist, and I want to show it to you for two specific reasons. So let me switch back to my iPad, and I'm going to open Wunderlist. Wunderlist is a nice, simple, clean app. So on the left, you have a sidebar that is all of the lists that you have, and you can make a list of anything. You'll see here I've just made a list of movies I'd like to see because I'm way behind on like all the Oscar winners. So at its most basic level, it's just a list. You can just say, well, I want to see something. Let's spell it correctly. And that gets added to the list. You can double tap an item and give more details on it, such as when you want this thing to happen, a reminder, or a subtask, or a note. And you can share your lists with other people. Now, the reason I wanted to show you this is that it may look very similar to the capabilities that the Reminders app has with iCloud. That's true. You can view these on your iPhone. You can view them in a web browser on a Mac or a PC. And you can share these lists with other people just as you can in Reminders. But it doesn't use iCloud. So if for any reason you can't or don't want to use iCloud, but you want those sorts of list sharing capabilities, and you want maybe just a little bit more, such as the ability to... Sorry. The ability to quickly mark something as a favorite or reorganize things by drag and drop, Wunderlist might be an example of an app that would do that. Again, check the show notes for a bunch of other apps in this category. Now, next is customer relations management. Now, I have to be honest here. This is not my world. I am aware of the fact that these tools exist. I have looked at them. I don't work I'm not a salesperson or the type of person who would sort of use this in my work. But I want to let you know that if you are a salesperson or a marketing person, or you know, you do real estate, or you have some other kind of thing where you are frequently interacting with customers and clients and trying to create deals that, you know, you'll sell people things or get money from them for services, this could be a type of app that's useful. If you are such a person, you are undoubtedly already using a CRM app on your other devices, but I just want to let you know that they exist on the iPad too, and some of them are kind of interesting. Now, there are tons of standalone customer relations management apps on your iPad. There are also apps that tie into various services. For example, if your company uses Salesforce, then you can get Salesforce Touch so that all that data is stored in the cloud. You can get it from your other devices, but you can also access it from your iPad. And I'm going to show you one called Base CRM because it was free to download and free to subscribe to the syncing service for a very basic level of data, which of course is far more than I would ever need. And it'll just give you an idea of what it's like. So I keep double tapping when I should single tap. All right. So here's Base, and your dashboard sort of gives you an overview of what you're working on here. The basis of any CRM app is a contact list, and as you can see, I have two contacts in here, both of which came with the app. But of course, the idea is you would populate this with all of your suppliers and customers and contacts. And then this particular app is geared toward making deals. So you say, well, I am approaching a certain company to redesign their website. And I want to move them through the different stages. First, it's a prospect. And then once I've decided, yes, or, you know, we've mutually decided this can move forward, then they go up to qualified. They meet our criteria for a client. And then we give them a quote. And it goes through all these different stages until it's done and we have money. And so the idea of this app is that you track every stage of that. Oh, I need to call this person back on this date to give him more information or to ask him a question. I had a meeting with him, so I'm going to type some notes about that, include those in here. Basically, all of the data that has to do with that ongoing relationship of trying to get the sale or the deal or maintain a relationship with a customer is all tracked in this app. Again, I'm not particularly recommending this one because this is not a thing that I do. I'm merely telling you it's out there. Now, something that I do have some experience with in previous careers is project management. Now, when I think of project management, I think of, all right, well, we are going to design this massive piece of software. It's going to require, you know, 10 engineers working for 6 months and all these different moving parts, and everybody's schedule has to be coordinated and aligned, and this task is going to depend on this task being done, and this has to be done before that has to be done. This is going to take this number of days, but if it takes too long, then that's going to push out all these other things. And so For me, project management evokes sort of keeping track of all those people and events and projects and tasks that involve doing some large project. So there are tons of project management apps for the iPad. Some of them are very specific. For example, Mpango Project is for people in the building trades, for contractors and interior designers and things of that sort. And it's very much geared toward tracking the sorts of things that would happen in a construction-related project. OmniPlan is much more general. I'd like to just show you briefly one called Project Planning Pro, again, because it was cheap. And actually, it's from what I can tell, it's pretty good. So it comes with this built-in, which is nice because this is familiar to me, a sample software development plan. And what you have is, on the left-hand side, a list of all the individual tasks, and you can assign each task a duration and when it has to start or must not begin before or after a certain date and who's going to be working on it. And then on the right-hand side, of course, you can move this. There we go. You can move this wider or narrower as you like. This is a Gantt chart. So it shows each of those tasks as a little block, and little arrows connect them so that you can see what depends on what. And as one task lengthens or shrinks, the other ones can expand or contract accordingly. And if you say, well, you know, this I'll double tap on this item here, I need to add some more detail about this. It's now, 50% complete, or it's going to take, more days, or whatever the case may be. You can add that in there and tap OK, and everything else will reorganize accordingly. So that's an example of a project management app on the iPad. Next subcategory is databases. Now, the databases are the sort of thing that if you need them, you already probably use them, and you know that you need them. If you don't use any databases right now, you can sort of sleep for the next 3 minutes because it's just one of those things. There are lots of kinds of data that people need to keep track of, that a database is the logical way, whether it's your company's inventory or your personal record collection or your wine collection or whatever it may be. Contacts are, of course, a database. For me, using the Contacts app in iOS is more than adequate because I don't have that many contacts and I don't need that much information on them. But some people need more. And so if you are the sort of person who uses a database on a desktop computer, you will probably want to use something comparable on your iPad. And there are lots of options. So we begin with Bento. Bento is $10. And this is sort of FileMaker Pro's younger sibling. And it's a really quite nice database. What you can do with Bento is you can create the entire database from scratch, if you like, on your iPad. It's not a heavy-duty relational bells and whistles kind of database, but it's really quite nice. And if you're running Bento on your Mac, you can sync them back and forth quite easily. For $10, not bad at all. Then there's FileMaker Go, which of course is the mobile counterpart to FileMaker Pro. Now, as of its latest version, FileMaker Go cannot create a database on your iPad. You have to use FileMaker Pro 12 or FileMaker Advanced 12 on a Mac or PC to create the database. Then you can either copy that database onto your iPad, by email or using iTunes or whatever. Or if you're hosting the database using FileMaker 12 Server or FileMaker 12 Advanced or whatever on the desktop, but it's a hosted database, then you can connect to that hosted database from your iPad. FileMaker is vastly, vastly more powerful than Bento, but you have to be using FileMaker 12, some version of FileMaker 12, to actually create the database. And if you want it to stay in sync, you have to be hosting it over the network. If you just have a desktop computer that has a copy of FileMaker 12 on it, it will not stay in sync automatically with your iPad. You have to close it on your Mac, copy it to your iPad, enter stuff, close it on your iPad, copy it to a Mac, a little bit cumbersome, but very, very powerful. Then there's this app called HandyBase. HandyBase has been around for a long time, and it's actually a very, very powerful relational database. It is available on almost any platform. I mean, I had HandyBase running on a Palm like 15 years ago. I mean, it's been around. On the iPad, it has, I think, the world's most skeuomorphic interface. You have a literal, like a desktop with a blotter and a cup of pencil. I mean, I don't know how much you can see in this little thumbnail, but there's a newspaper sitting on the desk and literal folders with, like, you know, colored tape on them with labels. So if you like that sort of I'm living in the real world, but yet you want a powerful relational database that will sync with other versions, HandyBase might be something to try. And then there's another, I mean, again, there are many, I'm just giving you some a range of examples. There's something called Flexile, which doesn't have that skeuomorphic look, but it is a very powerful database that is really designed just for the iPad. And you can track tons and tons of stuff in it, has some nice 3D effects and so forth. If you are looking for something inexpensive, something different, something very powerful, it's a very highly rated app, but it's not something that's going to sync with everything else that you use. Now, these are all sort of graphical databases. But what if you are a system administrator or you manage websites and they use something like MySQL or Oracle or, you know, Access, PostgreSQL, SQLite, SQL Server, etc.? Well, don't worry, there's an app for that. Almost any database management system you can think of has at least one and probably a dozen apps that you can manage the raw data and even, you know, create new databases sometimes on your iPad. Do a search in the App Store and you will probably find what you're looking for. Now, if you are in the App Store and you do a search for database, you might be surprised that quite a few of the things come up are in this category, password managers. Well, of course, password managers are databases that are mainly designed to store things like usernames and passwords, also credit card numbers and contact information. But they encrypt it, so it's secure. And often they will have some mechanism whereby you can automatically enter this stuff in a web browser as well. Now, if you have been following the news, you may have heard about this little book that just came out a few days ago, Take Control of Your Passwords. Apparently written by some cartoon character. And I talk a great deal about password managers in that book, so if that's a thing that's of interest to you, I encourage you to go get that book and find out all about them. The last category for today is the iPad and money. So I'm going to break this down into sort of personal and business, and then something that crosses in between the two of them. If you use a financial management app on your computer, you might want to use something similar on your iPad. Now, there isn't, you know, QuickBooks for iPad, and the apps that I'm going to show you here do not sync with desktop apps. These are not like, it's not like the iPad version of whatever. But if you need to do basic personal financial management and you want an app that can track your checks and your transactions and your bills and so forth, any of these can do it. Now, the third one down there, the personal capital banking and investing, will connect to your various bank accounts and investment accounts and not only show you your balances, but it'll enable you to do transfers online and all kinds of other stuff. Again, this is not the iPad equivalent of a desktop app. It's really something that if you want to use your iPad as the main tool for money management, but you want to connect to these other services, that would be a good way to do it. Now, moving into a more businessy area, what about credit cards? Now, there are lots and lots and lots and lots of ways that you can use your iPad to accept credit cards. And I want to emphasize, this is not just if you run a business. Maybe you're just a guy and you want to hold a garage sale and you'd like people to be able to pay with credit cards. You have a bake sale for your kid's school, or you want to go out to a restaurant with a bunch of friends and you want to split the check, but nobody has cash, everybody has credit cards. Well, there are lots and lots of ways you can use your iPad to accept credit cards, and basically they all work similarly. You will have, in most cases, a little dongle like this. And this particular one is from Square, and this plugs into your iPad's audio port, which in fact I'm going to do right now so I can demonstrate it to you. Some of them use Bluetooth. Flint, the third one down there, is a new app. It's really cool. As long as you have a third generation or newer iPad, it will use your iPad's camera to capture the front and back of a credit card. This counts as a swipe, but you don't need any extra hardware. So that's a cool thing. Now, all of these services basically will say, yes, you can accept a credit card either as an individual or for your business. We will take a percentage of each sale. So you have to look at each one to see what their percentages and fees are. But for either a person or a business, this could be a cool thing. So I want to show you Square Register. And I may have lost... I lost my iPad's video at exactly this point when we were doing our practice run. There we are. Square Register. So with Square Register, you can use it. You can simply say, I ran into somebody who wants to pay me $15 for, you know, the lint in my pocket. And so you can just on the fly enter, well, some arbitrary amount for some arbitrary item, take their credit card and done. But if you have stuff you are selling many of, you can add them in here beforehand. You can add, you know, particular colors, sizes, prices, so they're really easy to enter. So let's suppose I wanted to sell you a T-shirt with, you know, my picture on it. And I also wanted to sell you an autographed poster of me because, you know, these are hot items. You come up to my booth at the, you know, whatever, and you say, okay, I'd like to buy those two things. So you enter that, you say, I'm going to charge this person $25. At this point, you can take $25 in cash and it'll just record that sale. Or you can take a credit card, and this is an actual card, and swipe it. And swipe it. Oops, sorry about that. It worked yesterday. Okay. Well, that wasn't it. So, sorry. What normally happens, technology, it's always during the demo. It worked great yesterday. Anyway, what is supposed to happen is that it'll say, great, I got the credit card number. Now please sign. You can turn off signatures if you like for amounts under $25, but there will basically be a big line on the screen where the customer can sign with their finger or a stylus if you have one, and done. It charges their credit card, and you have previously set up with Square, you know, where what bank account they're going to deposit this money into, and it just happens behind the scenes. So I apologize, and of course you could just type in the credit card number, but that's boring. All right. Now, what if your needs for a credit card or for, you know, taking in money are a little bit more advanced? Well, you can, in fact, turn your iPad into a cash register. Obviously, this wouldn't be your iPad. This would be a specific iPad you've set aside for just this purpose, because you're going to securely mount your iPad in a holder. That holder might have a credit card reader on the side of it, might have a cash drawer underneath it, and might have a receipt printer connected to it. And there are many companies that sell you all these accessories as well as software to go with them. Here are a few. The one that's pictured here is the NCR Silver. You buy this bundle of the stand and the reader and the printer and the cash drawer for about $500. You use their app, and then you have a complete, this is a cash register that you can use in a store or in a restaurant. Some of these services offer a separate receipt printer for the kitchen, so that when somebody places an order at your restaurant, the people in the kitchen say, "Oh yes, you know, this is what I'm cooking." Some of them offer scales, so if you're weighing, you know, produce or something, your iPad can work for that as well. So the iPad is not just this thing that is this multi-purpose device that you carry around and use for business tasks. It can also be an appliance, and as an appliance, it can be a cash register, or a scanner, or many other kinds of things. So we are at the 45-minute mark. And that being the case, I would like to ask if you have any questions.
All right. Thank you, Joe. We do have a couple of questions that have come in via the chat that we'll answer next. But that's it for our prepared presentation. So if you need to get back to work or back to your Saturday enjoyment, please, thanks for watching. And remember, you can come back anytime to this page to watch the Q&A session or any other bits you might have missed. Our first question, the iCloud Tabs feature.
Yes.
Does that work in Safari for Windows?
That is a good question. You do know the answer?
I do know the answer because I'm like, oh, that's a good question. And I looked it up very quickly in Google. It's actually a little more interesting than that. The problem is that iCloud Tabs is a feature in Safari 6. And Apple stopped developing Safari for Windows at the 5.1.7, I think it is, version. So the answer is, unfortunately, no, there is no iCloud Tabs feature. And it sounds like Apple is basically saying, yeah, it's not really worth keeping Safari up for Windows. We're doing well enough at the iOS and Mac side, so we're gonna let the Windows version.
That would have been my guess, but I'm glad you had the actual truth to offer, because I didn't know for sure.
Yeah, we do keep up a little bit on the Windows side of things that Apple does, but even still, it's not our focus.
Right.
So, okay, next question. Of the mobile payment services, you know, Square and Flint and all of those, do you know which one has the highest market share or sort of the most common?
I don't know for certain. Square is the one I have heard the most about. It has the most buzz. But of course, remember, Square is aimed primarily at individuals and small businesses. You can get that whole, you know, cash drawer and receipt printer and all that kind of thing for Square. But it could very well be the case that one of these big payment processing companies that all they do is, you know, processing credit card payments, that because of their backstream channels, they have more customers. I truly don't know. But I will say, you know, I have Square myself, and it usually works. And so just because it seems functional and it's simple to use and it meets my needs, that would be probably where I would gravitate.
I've definitely also seen Square being used in a lot more places in the wild than anything else.
Yeah.
So, you know, just from a standpoint of, you know, going to Macworld and, you know, getting lunch at this little place on the corner, you know, they were using Square, going to the farmer's market and seeing people use Square.
And I should mention, it's free to sign up for Square. You go online, you enter your bank account info, they send you the free little reader thing, which usually works. They even give you these little stickers that you can stick on your, I don't know, forehead or iPad, yeah, or whatever. They say, yeah, I accept Visa, I accept American Express. Why not?
Okay. Tom Piper asks, going back a show or two, do you expect Microsoft Office to come out soon for the iPad?
Well, so what happened was several months ago, there was this rumor that Microsoft Office was coming for the iPad. And apparently some Microsoft site in, I don't remember, Poland or Hungary or, I don't know, some place, had a page about this that was very quickly taken down, but it somehow got out. And the claim on that page was that this would be happening this month, March 2013. Hasn't happened yet, it's early in the month, but what has happened in between is that Microsoft has released, you know, Office 365. So this sort of new, a new version of Office for Windows, not yet for Mac. Well, there is a new version for Mac. It looks exactly the same as the old version. What they've introduced is a subscription model, so you can pay by the month rather than, you know, just an outright license. And Office 365 does give you online editing of Office documents, but not so much on the iPad. It's not the same thing as having Office on the iPad. So, for all I know, Microsoft could be still working on it. For all I know, they might have started working on it and decided they're going to can that project. Your guess is as good as mine.
They certainly seem to be, if they are working on it, they're doing a very good job of keeping it mum. So,
you know how Microsoft likes to steal ideas from Apple. Maybe they're stealing the secrecy idea from Apple and just keeping a lid on it.
Although it's actually interesting, because although Microsoft, you know, they may be keeping this quiet, Microsoft actually usually goes for a relatively transparent approach because they work with a lot of businesses, and businesses like to plan ahead. So the businesses want to say, you know, if we're going to be adopting iPads, we want to know if we're going to be able to use Microsoft Office. What do you got for us? And
right.
So Microsoft will often pre-announce things that way.
But, you know, the other thing that happened in recent months was Surface. So, you know, Microsoft would really rather you bought their hardware. And because here's the thing. Surface, by most accounts, is not selling very well. So if Microsoft felt that by offering Office for the iPad, that would even further hinder Surface sales, which, of course, they're going to probably make more money on, they would be disinclined to do that. So I would not be surprised if the combination of Office 365 and Surface's kind of tepid reception is not contributing to why we haven't seen Office on the iPad.
Okay. Well, the one thing that Tony reminded me about that we wanted to just share with you, we got to play with these one of these just a little bit at Macworld, because our friend Jeff Carlson had one for review. There is an interesting device called the Seagate Wireless Plus, which is a hard drive with a built-in Wi-Fi hotspot. And what this is good for is that there's an iOS app that comes with it. And so it's a way to copy files to and from this big hard disk. I think it's a terabyte hard disk or whatever, from this app, which is a way to significantly expand your iOS storage. We didn't get to use it too much, and I haven't heard from Jeff if he's done much more with it since then. But it's a pretty compelling product for anyone who's trying to do a lot on their iPad and for whom 128 gigabytes simply isn't nearly enough.
Right. By the way, Adam, there was a question that came in the chat before we started the Hangout that could you repeat that so I can answer it for everybody?
Yeah, this was kind of an interesting question. David asked, he was looking at all the reviews on the various Office apps that you had talked about in an earlier show. And he was kind of troubled that many of the reviews were pretty bad, including Office Squared HD, which was your pick.
Right.
So, first of all, can you say a little bit more about Office Squared HD and your opinion of it? And then let's talk a little bit about reviews and how people should take them.
Right. So I don't know whether I have used the most recent update of Office Squared HD, but I have used many previous versions. And when I have used previous versions, I have found them to be superior to the other similar Office editing apps. They do the one crucial thing that I need, which is to do no harm. So you import something from Word, you mess with it, even if there's features that Office Squared HD itself doesn't have, it's going to leave that stuff in your Word document, so the next person that looks at it will see it intact. Now it does not have all the features of Word for Windows or for Mac. I talked to the guys that make it at Macworld, and they showed me some of the newest features. And clearly, they are trying to get closer to feature parity. But it's Office is a huge app, so it's going to take a while before that happens. But they are paying attention to it. Now, because I don't know what these specific complaints are in the reviews, I can't speak to individual complaints, but I do want to talk about reviews generally, because I have personally had software that I've bought from the iOS app store that I love, and then I go onto the store and I see all these one-star reviews, and I'm like, mind-boggled. I have also had apps that I bought because they had 5-star reviews, and I hated them. So what's going on here? Well, the first thing you have to remember is that you don't have to justify your review. You can give a 1-star review for any reason. And something I have seen many, many times is that people give an app 1-star because it doesn't do what they thought it was going to do. Now, this can be sometimes the fault of the developer of not putting a thorough enough explanation, enough warnings in their description, but I have seen cases where it was clearly, this does X. It does not do Y. and somebody says, it doesn't do Y, you know, well, what can you do? And the thing is that as a developer, you have no recourse. If, you know, developers can't see who made the comments, they can't reply to comments, they can't have negative comments purged or revised. If I make an app that does X and somebody says, well, I don't like it because it didn't do Y, I can't even defend myself in the app store. I can't say, well, sorry, but it wasn't made to do that. Because the reviews in the app store are so one way and so one-sided, and because they could reflect just any sort of capricious, you know, whim, I tend to take them with a grain of salt. Now, that's bad news, really, because if you're looking at an app that costs money, especially if it's more than, you know, $5 or $10, like a real, you know, expensive app, the reviews are kind of all you have to go on. So what I would suggest is, number one, read the reviews carefully, see if they appear to have been thoughtfully written. Maybe look at some other reviews that people that those reviewers have written to see, you know, what kinds of things they say. But then go outside the app store. Just Google it. Google the app in question. See if a magazine or another website, you know, has Macworld reviewed this, has Engadget reviewed it, has Tidbits reviewed it, has somebody else. Because a third-party review, even a very informal one, like just, you know, somebody on their blog or whatever, can probably give you a truer picture of what it's like than what the App Store reviews do.
I would, a couple of things. I mean, actually, honestly, I blame Apple for a lot of this. That I really think Apple has created a fairly mediocre system. And it's not like they don't have good examples. So for instance, Amazon, vast numbers of reviews, and the reviews can be voted on. So it's one of those things where people can say, this was a good review. And the good reviews float to the top, the bad reviews float to the bottom. Similarly, Apple changed something not that long ago, a couple months at this point, such that you only get like one line of description without clicking a more button.
Yes, right.
I hate that. I always click the more button. And so I could see someone moving quickly. They see the one line. They click buy. Oh, they didn't get it doesn't do Y because they didn't read the rest of it.
Right.
Yes, they're their fault,
right.
But Apple hasn't made it easy. And then, you know, as you were saying, you know, I think it's just unconscionable that Apple doesn't allow developers to respond. It's just this one-way conduit that's really troublesome. And of course, no demos. You know, if there was a possibility for a demo, sometimes you can get the free app, use the free app, see if that's good enough, and then either use an in-app purchase or buy the commercial app, and that's another way to work around it. I've done that a number of times. I'm like, there's 17 of these apps. I don't know which one is best. The reviews are all similar. I'll just try this one because it's free, and then
right.
I can see whether I want to pay for more. Okay. The chatter in the chat room suggests real quickly that NeoOffice for the iPad is pretty good. So
okay.
For anyone who is looking for, you know, to compare another Office program, NeoOffice.
Excellent.
And then we have two questions about the ScanSnap.
Yes.
First, do you know if the ScanSnap has an auto-export to database feature, and particularly if it would read a name field, such as, say, school student records?
Well, first of all, definitely not for the direct-to-iPad. So for scanning direct to an iPad, no. Now, the ScanSnap comes with a bunch of apps, so when you can set it up so that when you scan something, it goes to the location of your choice, and that could be anywhere from just, you know, put it in a folder, to send it to iPhoto, to send it to DevonThink Pro, to, you know, run OCR in it, put it in this place. And one of the things that it comes with is business card scanning software. So if you have it, if you scan something and say, now treat this as a business card, then it could pull out the data on your Mac or PC, mind you. It can try to semi-intelligently figure out which of these things is a name, but it's not going to be able to, you know, that's a standalone app, so it's not going to be able to pull out a name and put it into your own arbitrary database. This scanner is brand new. I haven't played with that feature of it, but I've played with similar business card scanning software on other scanners. And I've found it to be kind of iffy. It's not necessarily great at identifying what all the pieces are without some additional work. So I don't have a great answer for you there.
Okay. And a more general question, is the ScanSnap a good general purpose scanner? You know, obviously it will work with a desktop computer. Yeah, I think we're getting a thumbs up on the scanner. Another person's asking, do you prefer the ScanSnap to Canon's Scantini?
Okay. So I have not used a Scantini. The ScanSnap that is currently sitting on my desk is the at least fourth model I've tried, and it is so cool. I mean, you know, I've been using ScanSnaps for like 10 years, and I've always liked them, but maybe not 10 years, 7 or 8 years. But this one is so fast. It's so fast, and it's really, I mean, it just has amazing features. So I love, big fan of the ScanSnaps.
And to be clear, those are document scanners, so you're yes. Feeding a page in, not a flatbed.
Right, these are not flatbeds. So the idea is, now these scanners, you can put a stack of, you know, 20 or 30 pages in the feeder, and it just goes zip, 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 and it scans both sides of the page at once. So, you know, it's not like you have to scan one side, take it out, flip it over, scan the other side. You just put a stack of stuff in, and it just goes. And it's shockingly fast, something like 30 sheets a minute, and that could be double-sided. It automatically figures out if what is on the page is color or black and white or grayscale. It straightens out crooked pages. It does everything, and you can have it, you know, do OCR automatically. They're super powerful tools. Now, in another book that I wrote, Take Control of Your Paperless Office, I talk about quite a few different models of document scanners. Another scanner that I have it in the box over there, I haven't even opened it up yet, is the Neat Receipts. So Neat has document scanners that do identify things like, you know, this is a receipt, so what was the date, what was the amount, this is a business card, what was all the different fields. And, you know, Canon makes them, and tons of other companies make good document scanners. Personally, I have not found one that I like better than Fujitsu's. I'm really, really quite fond of it.
So that's just about it. There is one question that I want to ask, I know I'm putting you on the spot a little bit with this, but it sort of is closing for the entire series. What percent of the time would you say you're working on the iPad now?
I would say maybe...
Feel free to lie. That's right.
Yeah, I would say no more than 30%. And I have to, you know, that does not mean, obviously, that I don't think the iPad is good for work. The things that I can do really effectively on the iPad are web research, email, calendar stuff, the kinds of things that, you know, like drawing diagrams and, you know, roughing out like what a new website should look like, things like that. My work, 90% of my work is typing. And I can type on an iPad. I can't type very fast on the built-in keyboard, but I can certainly use an external keyboard and type. But there's this further complication that might not apply to other writers as much as it applies to me, which is that of the typing I do, maybe 75% has to be done in Pages. And all the Pages exists on the iPad. Pages on the iPad does not have enough features in it that the desktop version has. And it does lose data when you import stuff from the desktop version. So because so much of what I do personally is Pages, that won't work. And then the next chunk of stuff that I do is just plain text editing in Markdown. And there are lots of plain text editors that work with Markdown. But in the Tidbits world, we don't just have plain text files that are done in Markdown. We have plain text files that are done in Markdown and managed through our own semi-proprietary content management system. And there is currently no way I'm aware of on the iPad to tie into that system. So I'd have to end up doing a lot of copying and pasting and stuff. So because of the peculiarities of the particular work that I do, that I have to use these systems that just aren't sufficiently well developed on the iPad, a lot of my stuff is on a Mac. That said, though, things have gotten better, significantly better, over the years, and I would not be surprised if a future version of Pages for the iPad has the stuff that I need, or if a future text editor on the iPad has the stuff I need. And I would be quite happy to write a book completely on the iPad. It's just that for the things I do, I too often rely on tools that are either they only exist on the Mac or they're more comfortable to use on the Mac.
Well, excellent. That wraps it up for the final show of Take Control Live, Working with Your iPad. Thanks to Joe for sharing so many great technical details, and thanks to everyone in the chat room who asked questions during the shows and all of those who sent email before as well. We'll be updating the Season Pass PDF with all the notes and links that Joe discussed in the show later today. We'll send you email as soon as it's available for download. The video for each of the four shows will remain available indefinitely, and we're already thinking about what we're going to do next. No promises, but until then, see you on the net.